Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori on this beautiful Saturday morning, August 3rd, 2019. So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 Eastern Standard Time, and you can hear us from anywhere on the planet online at 883wppb.org. And each show is archived on my website at annliguori.com and turned into podcasts. So you can't miss us. How are we doing this morning? Happy August. Back from a glorious 10 days in Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, the Open Championship, where Shane Lowry's win and his week-long celebration was just something to watch throughout all of Ireland. What a great week. Then we had the opportunity to spend 5 days playing golf on some of Ireland's incredible links courses and a parkland course. And you'll be hearing more about that trip. We were in Donegal this time and in Sligo. And if you're planning a trip to the Emerald Isle, you'll want to catch the show and podcast about some of these spectacular courses in Ireland. It's hands down my favorite country for golf and only 5 hours from JFK. It's actually easier to get to Ireland than it is to fly to LA. Anyway, we are 3 weeks away from the start of the U.S. Open Tennis Championships, the largest attended sporting event in the world, the last major on the tennis calendar, and I'll be broadcasting from there live on the Saturdays of each week of that 14-day extravaganza, so you'll hear all about what's happening at the U.S. Open. I'm not going to tell you how many years I've been doing the U.S. Open Tennis Championship, but let's just say I started when I was 10. Anyway, this morning I'm so excited because we have three dynamo women in the house, and we are going to discuss business, sports, communications, women in sports, women in business, the Fortune Most Powerful Women Summit. And if it has to do with female power, we're going to cover it. And we have three powerful women in their own right here in the studio. And I'm so delighted that they have come in to visit. I mean, hey, it's the Hamptons, so,
right.
You know, yeah. It's not that difficult.
Well, it's really a sacrifice to be here. The only sacrifice was getting up this early.
Exactly. Right. I just wanted to make sure that you set your alarm clocks. But anyway, Jane Hansen, who you just heard, Mary Savillo, communication gurus, former anchors and show hosts on NBC New York. Jane and Mary were the first female co-anchors in a major market, and they are communication gurus and coaches. They coach sports figures, CEOs, anybody who is on center stage. So we're going to be talking to Jane Hansen and Mary Savillo. Patty Sellers is in the house. Yay, hey, Patty. Yeah. Patty is the chair of the Fortune Most Powerful Women Summit, the preeminent gathering of women leaders. She spent over 30 years writing for Fortune magazine and the past 20 years building Fortune Most Powerful Women, where she chairs the annual MPW Summit. And today she and Nina Easton run Sellers Easton Media. So I can't wait to talk to you all. We'll do that in 1 second after I tell you that Sports Interview with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Dune Jewelry and the Hamptons Rope Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or spot in timeless pieces for men and women. That's Dune, D-U-N-E. I'm showing it off right now.
Oh, here, let's look at your necklace, because I did turn my live Facebook video on.
I love it. Hi, everybody. Bye. Dune Jewelry, yeah. The Hamptons Rope Collection.
So, I have it, too, except I lost mine. I need more.
Hint. DuneJewelry.com. And by Peak Vision Sunglasses. Peak Vision, where are my peaks? Zero distortion, unmatched clarity, change your game.
Nice.
PeakVision.com, PeakVision.com. And by Peconic Bay Medical Center, the eastern hub for the world-class resources of New York's largest healthcare system, Northwell Health. Peconic Bay Medical Center, serving 250,000 East End residents. Learn more at pbmchealth.org.
I'm Meg Noonan, host of Freeform Radio, inviting you to join me every Sunday from 6 until 8 p.m. for a lively mix of rock in all its glorious subgenres, including but never limited to classic rock and roll, American and British blues, glam and garage, punk and new wave, indie, folk, and country, plus a heavy dose of soul, funk, R&B, and more. So tune into Freeform Radio, where variety reigns supreme, every Sunday night at 6 on 88.3 WPPB.
Girl is on fire. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori on this gorgeous Saturday morning. And I am so thrilled to have Jane Hansen, Mary Savillo, Patty Sellers in the house.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you, Anne.
Talk about a powerhouse here. It's so great to see you. And I want to introduce you all to our loyal audience, and we'll start with Mary. I want to know how each of you got started in your communication careers, and what and how did you arrive to New York? Mary?
Oh boy, okay, a few years back, I went to Mizzou Journalism School, so, because I grew up in Kansas City, went to the University of Missouri, and I started out in print, moved to broadcast pretty quickly, because that was a time when they were looking for
one
women.
Girl for each station.
Yeah. No more. One. But honestly, I had a very long career, probably 25 years in television news. And then I kind of capped it off at the peak with Jane Hansen. She
yes.
and I anchored the news together, the first women anchor team in a major market. And maybe
and thus
all together.
I think actually in the country and perhaps in the world.
Gosh. I don't, yeah.
do you mind if I tell this little story?
No, please.
Okay, so Matt Lauer began
first
his
First of all,
career.
You both have amazing voices, don't they, Patty?
Why, thank you very
all
much.
You all have
No, and just incredible. And just in your everyday conversation, too.
Well, we try to. But anyway, so Matt Lauer was doing the morning news call today in New York with me in New York City, and it was a very successful show. And Matt got called up to do a little program called The Today Show. So when Matt first went to do that, Mary came in to be the interim replacement. And
I
so
I was a street reporter.
Yeah, she was a street reporter. So we're out there. Well, we weren't always on the street, but you
were
a street
reporter.
Well, after
quite a bit of time on the street.
But anyway, so Mary and I are sitting together doing the news, the first all-female anchor team ever. And they kept bringing in a new guy that I'd practice with, and they go, nah, nah, nah. And one day, our then boss, who, by the way, just died, he was a wonderful mentor to me, for sure, and to Mary as well, named Bill Bolster. And all of a sudden, Bill's looking at the ratings, this larger-than-life character, and he goes, by God, these girls are killing it in the ratings. Because why am I looking for a man when my man is Mary?
Yeah, I love
that. It's a great story.
It was really fun, and, you know, wonderful, wonderful years. And then, you know, after that 20-year run, I launched what is now, I guess, 15 years ago. I'm really dating myself, aren't I? But started.
No, but I actually think it was longer.
Anyway. Starting a coaching career.
Right.
You know, so Savillo Communications Group, Jane and I worked together, and we actually worked all over the world. We were in China very recently working with Harman. And we've worked with sports figures, as you mentioned, you know, NASCAR, baseball, name, but mostly chief executives,
right.
Corporate folks.
And how long ago did
Patty.
You put that together?
Huh?
How long ago?
I think it was when I left NBC,
like
it was 2002.
Or something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Like that.
And so ever since then, really built a great business,
sure.
Coaching people
I know,
for all their
all
presentations.
Over the place.
Yeah. All
social
over the world.
Media.
Really.
We've been to Dublin a few times working. You just talked about the Emerald Isle, one of our favorite places.
Yeah. And we just launched an e-learning platform, too.
Yeah.
Because that's the way people are picking up their information.
I want to go back to you and just ask about the transition of going from, you know, broadcasting to training, but let's get that in a second. Jane, you're from Minnesota?
I'm from Canby, Minnesota, population 1,800 on the very far southwestern part of the state where...
Be all you can be.
Be all you can be and can be was the town's slogan.
Oh, I love that. And you
yeah, well, notice
all you
I'm not
be.
Being all...
You lived it, Jane.
they meant for me to stay in Canby, however. But it's a place where you stand on a hill and you can see Montana. But anyway, so I was lucky enough to get employed in New York very, very early on. I was such a young girl when I walked in that television station with these iconic figures, Chuck Scarborough and, the longtime news anchor at WNBC, Sue Simmons, Gabe Pressman, who's the iconic newsman, and of course, all of the wonderful big stars then of the NBC News division, Tom Brokaw, et cetera. Tom grew up in South Dakota, not very far from where I was as a kid. So that was a really, really lucky job for me to get. I think that they were shocked that they hired somebody so young. But it was great. It was a lot of fun and covered everything under the sun.
Was it the traditional route, agent sends the tape kind of
thing? No, I got, well, back then they had these things called talent scouts. And there was a woman who sent my tape. I wanted to go to the East Coast. I always wanted to move to the East Coast.
And you were doing TV in Minnesota for a while.
No, at that point I was doing TV in Iowa.
Oh, in Iowa.
Cedar
you stayed
Rapids,
in the Midwest.
Iowa, to be exact.
Okay.
And which was the 79th market, and I went from the 79th to the first. But what happened is this woman talent scout got my tape, and she said, I want to move east. So I'm thinking, I could go to maybe New Haven, or maybe I'm going to go to Syracuse, or, I'm thinking some really much smaller television station. And she goes, no, New York. And I went, what? So
had you been to New York before?
A few times, but, never like that. Anyway, so I get to New York, and what happened is I got this phone call from the news director from WNBC, and his name was Ron Kershaw, our beloved Ron Kershaw. And so Ron calls me up and he goes, hello, it's Ron Kershaw, WNBC, New York. And I went, yeah, right. And I hung up on him. He calls back and he says, perhaps you didn't hear me. And I said, I heard you. I don't know who this is, but it's not funny. And I hung up again. And he calls back. He says, write this number down. So he wrote the number down. And, at NBC, the first six digits are 212664. So it's 212664 in his extension. And I call up and this woman answers, good morning, Ron Kershaw's office, WNBC TV. And I went, oh, what have I done? And I tentatively say my name, and she howls, and she goes, we were wondering if you were going to call back. And she said, he can't believe somebody hung up on him. She goes, you're going to get this job because you did that, man. So net, fast forward, and he did hire me.
Oh, my gosh.
Bravo.
Like
what
a
great story.
It was a riot. We had a wonderful, wonderful run at WNBC. I was there for 29 years.
Huh. Right.
So
what a brand, too.
Yeah, great brand. Yeah. Loved
Patty
it.
Patty is in the house. Patty Sellers, all the way from Allentown, PA. Welcome.
Yeah, I drove in from Allentown this morning.
Hey, is that song? It's named after you, right?
It is, the Billy Joel song, yeah. I grew up in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Spent the first 18 years of my life there. Went to the University of Virginia. Wanted to write for a magazine. My parents thought I should be a lawyer because I asked questions throughout my childhood.
Shocker.
The market for journalism, this is before print started dying, long before print started dying, was terrible when I was getting out of college in the 80s. And I ended up working for a startup business newspaper in Washington, but 2 years later went to Fortune magazine and spent over 30 years writing for Fortune. Wow. And I had no interest in business when I wanted to write about, like, I had a very specific desire after I got out of college. I wanted to write about people in the arts who were like, write about like Martin Scorsese and do profiles of smart people and no interest in business. But what I liked about business, I found very quickly, was that these people are smart, most of them, and these people can make a difference in the world. They have power. And so I specialized during my 30 years at Fortune in writing sort of the big profiles, almost like the Vanity Fair-like profiles about people like, cover stories about Oprah Winfrey and Martha Stewart and Ted Turner and, Melinda Gates. I did the first solo profile that Melinda That's Gates huge. Ever agreed to do. So I loved the hard-to-get stories.
And 20 years ago, we started something called, Fortune started something called Most Powerful Women, which is now, I started it with a dear friend of mine named Sue Calloway, and who's gone from Fortune, but is a very close friend. And it's now Fortune's biggest franchise. Who would think? You know, Fortune 20 years ago was thought of as a men's magazine.
Absolutely.
In fact, at the late, great Time Incorporated, which used to be the biggest magazine company in the world and is now basically split up and Fortune is independently owned, Fortune was known as one of the men's magazines, yeah, along with Sports Illustrated,
right,
and Time. It was literally in the men's magazine category. And now, so anyway, 3 years ago, a Fortune colleague of mine, Nina Easton, who was the top Washington editor at Fortune, she and I started a company called Sellers Easton Media, which does storytelling for people, families, companies, organizations, telling their stories. So we work for clients and basically have transferred our skills from Fortune to the private market. And
awesome.
We're having a ball.
By the way, Susie Whaley just retweeted our tweet. She was the first female president of the PGA of America.
Oh,
so
that's
she's
fantastic.
Listening. Say hi to Susie Whaley.
Oh, yeah, Susie.
Hi, Susie.
Thank
we love
you,
Susie.
Hi, Susie.
She's so great.
Hi, Susie.
So, Patty, tell me about the environment at these conferences as far as you have these mega women all in one area. It must be just dynamic. I mean, they're sharing information, they're helping each other, they're supporting each other, or is it more of a competition kind of thing?
Hey, you know what I believe? I mean, Mary and Jane have both been to the Fortune Most Powerful Women Summit, and I think they will say, tell me, if Mary and Jane, if you agree, mm-hmm, there's a real spirit of magnanimity and collegiality. And
that's good to hear.
I might add, by the way, when we all began our careers, that wasn't what was happening. There was a great deal of competition. In fact, I remember the first time we had a female boss at WNBC, and I actually walked into the bathroom, and she was in there. And I went, oh, my God, my boss is in the same bathroom. Because I realized then that guys had these places where they could actually have conversations that we were never privy to.
But I think a lot of the Most Powerful Women Conference, a lot of it is Patty, and she really is great with, like, she's that old game concentration where you turn the, she does that with people.
I mean,
she's great at networking, and actually, almost all conferences are about this, but I would say, especially Most Powerful Women, they love the networking there. Yes, they love the content, what they're seeing on stage, but they also love the idea. And everybody is kind of on the same footing because you were all invited to this little club.
I mean, so there has been value in... So when I left my writing career at Fortune 3 years ago, they asked us, Nina and me both, to stay on and continue overseeing the summit. And I think the thread of our leadership, for what it's worth, I am the Allentown girl there. I am the Allentown, Pennsylvania girl there. I mean, I pride myself on being authentic, on speaking the same way to Mary Jones as I
Absolutely.
Do to Melinda Gates. And I think, you know, all four of us sitting here have learned that over the years. You don't talk differently to famous people. And in fact, presidents and heads of states and CEOs and sports celebrities appreciate. You and I both know Billie Jean King very well. She's as regular as they come.
I love it.
And
what
she
a visionary.
She loves the fact that, like, she likes people, and they all do. Like, don't treat me differently.
Right.
So I think that spirit exists at the summit. So every year at Fortune publishes, it's one of the biggest issues of the year, a Fortune Most Powerful Women list of the 50 most powerful businesswomen in America. And then they do an international list too. We do not call out the women who are on that list. We do not call them out at the summit. because everybody who comes, all of those 400 women who come to the summit, you are all powerful. And you are, we are not, we don't have a ranking system here. And I think that goes a long way. I mean, you know, the last thing I want to do in terms of celebrating powerful women is to suggest that it's an elite club that you can't get into.
Right.
Oh, it's pretty pricey. It's a lot of money. And it's invitation only.
It's ridiculous.
Right. And it's sold out. There's a waiting list every year. People clamoring.
Yeah. I mean, we have hundreds on the wait list, and it's a ridiculous $13,500 to come. I mean, it's just crazy, but, you know,
scholarships.
I know, right?
We were first to market. You know, they talk in the tech industry about this first mover advantage. And back in 1999, when we started the Fortune Most Powerful Women Summit, there was no major women leaders conference, which is shocking today because everybody has a women's conference today.
There's so many women's conferences.
Does.
So you were the first.
We were the first. And that's a huge help.
That is incredible.
It's a huge help.
And how you mentioned, Jane, earlier that years ago, women really did not support other women. They were too busy getting the job.
Well,
they were so competitive. And I'm in
the queen bee syndrome.
I'm in sports broadcasting and there's still not that many women in our business when you're comparing it to the, you know, amount of guys in the business. But I can remember I was at CBS Sports in my early 20s. My first job was working on the NFL Today Show. And all the women there, with the exception of maybe one or two, were secretaries.
Mm-hmm.
And here was this, you know, young woman, myself, you know, right out of college, talking sports with the guys. Just, I was an athlete. I want to get into that too, how being an athlete has really helped in my career. Everything you learn being an athlete growing up, you bring a lot of those skills and experiences to the boardroom. So I want to get into that in a second. But I think now the climate has changed, and you let me know, because I'm in still a very male-dominated business. And so you all work more with women executives than I do. Has it changed? Are women helping women? Are women supporting women? Are women promoting women and encouraging women? Guys tend to bond together and help each other. How about women?
Well,
are women at the point now where we
can
really support and help each other?
One quick thing which occurs to me, which is one of the reasons I think they bonded together so much as executives, is because they played on sports teams when they were little boys.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
And they learned that sense of camaraderie. And I speak.
Well, no, I think Jane is multitasking. Jane Hansen, thank you very
much. I think things have improved. But so Jane and I coach executives, and we work with a lot of, you know, because every major organization that you think of, from Morgan Stanley to Merck, we work a lot in pharma and they're all looking to advance women because there's such a focus on this and has been for some time. And so how do we get them not just to climb through the ranks? And while things, I believe, have improved in the whatever it is, 15 years or so that I've been coaching and working in corporate America around the world, there's still room for improvement. When you realize that, look at the composition of the boards. Patty, you know this because there's a lot of focus on most powerful women.
It's about 18% women, I think, of Fortune 500 companies. So boards of Fortune 500 companies, about 18% female directors,
all right,
I think.
Yeah, so it's still small. And, you know, we're 50% of the population, so...
Actually, I think we're 51.
We're 51 or 52.
So when you realize that it's kind of like a lot of organizations are looking to check the box, get a woman on there. So if you're saying, looking at other women and saying, I want that seat, you know, so yes, things have improved in terms of women supporting other women. I've seen it, I feel it, but there's still room for improvement.
According to the National Association of Women Business Owners, more than 11.6 million firms are owned by women.
Right.
Employing nearly 9 million people and generating $1.7 trillion in sales as of 2017. And women-owned firms, 51% or more, account for 39% of all privately held firms and contribute 8% of employment and 4.2% of revenues. So that's improving.
But
here's the but, Patty.
So all these studies, there are all sorts of studies on women entrepreneurs. The number one reason that men start companies is to make a lot of money. The number one reason that women start companies is to create the companies that they want to work for. And a lot of times, it's women leaving big companies because they don't like the big company bureaucracy. I want to start my own business. That's what I did. I don't want to build a Fortune 500 company. I love having a boutique high-end business in Sellers East and Media, and we will never be on any list, and I don't want that. I love working with half a dozen
people. It's all
people.
About passion.
Yeah.
But can I just...
And the
that,
money comes yeah. with it if you're passionate about
right.
it.
Right, but I think one of the things also is you get to a stage in your life where you want to take... You want to have your own terms. I mean, I love having my own schedule now.
I do too.
And not...
That's
and
absolutely...
All of that.
And not getting up too early in the morning except for today, for Anne.
For sports interview.
7 a.m. we got up.
So that it's well. So it's good to hear that it's improving, that women are starting to help others, but that we still there's still room for improvement there. But let's talk a little bit about.
Oh, can I just
yes,
say? Can ahead. I just add that when I moved to New York in the 80s, I grew up an NBC TV girl, and when I moved to New York, these two women, Mary and Jane, who I did
love,
not
love,
know at
love
the time,
them.
I watched them every morning on NBC.
What was the reaction like, ladies, when because you were the first female co-anchors? What initially, and I'll tell you then what the reaction was when I was the first woman to host a call-in sports show on WFAN, the first all-sports radio station, because that's
How
that was a little interesting.
Later, people still remember that. Well, like Patty. Yeah, thank you, Patty.
And I think it's so cool that you are, like, I don't know if you're best friends, but super,
it
super
seems
tight
like
friends.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
both
we,
are
yeah,
so
we together,
close.
Together. Together.
Do you know we have our grandfather, we both each have a grandfather named Ole.
Well,
that,
because we're both
you
know, half Norwegian.
Forever friends.
But people did respond really well to it. They loved that. And I don't know whether it was the hour in part two. You know, it just felt
it's
collegial.
It's more nurturing.
You wanted to
I
start.
I think it's a more
yeah.
nurturing time
yeah.
of day.
Wait, what hours were they?
Early.
Oh, I got up at 3:20 because I lived in the city. She lived in Westchester, so she got up earlier.
Oh, wow.
But she had a routine down, a pillow in the car, and fell asleep while she drove.
I would lay
she
my clothes out.
She was driving while sleeping.
I'd lay my clothes out on the floor in the morning, so all I had to do, like, literally lay them out in a profile, pick them up one by one, so I didn't have to think about it.
Yeah. Awesome. And how many years did you do that show?
Well,
Jane
I did it
a long time.
I did it for 18.
Wow.
Mary
did it for about 4 years, 4 or 5 years.
Right.
But we
right.
were, you know, it was, it's a tough road to hoe because the hours are very unusual.
Yeah.
You are at opposite ends of the clock. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize people went to dinner in restaurants at 8:30 at night.
Right.
It was a shocker.
What was the
right.
biggest bummer was that those were years because it was a very high-profile job and it led into the Today Show, which at that time was really leading the morning news, you know, competition.
By
and,
leaps and bounds.
Right. And, you know, so it was a great spot. But so you got all these great invitations, parties, premieres, all of that. But I could never go to them because I had to get up so early in the morning.
And we and this was before the internet. I mean, this is how we got our news in the morning.
Right,
I mean,
absolutely.
Everybody they had a huge audience.
Right.
I mean, it was actually surprising the amount of attention we got being women doing that show. And I remember our boss, like I said, he died recently. But before he died, I was visiting with him and he said, he goes, you know, I was so surprised that really worked with you two. And how much people liked it. And he said, I think it was because there was this kind of camaraderie that existed. There was no competition, which again was probably a little weird back then in those days. But we each had things that we did better than the other.
Right, I
kind of came to a combination that was really, really terrific.
That is so great to hear, because in 1987, when WFAN, the first all-sports radio station, first went on the air, and they asked me to host... Hey, LaGuori, what's the story?
So
that show started on the Saturday that WFAN, the first week WFAN was on the air. Doc Gooden was my first guest. I was able to snag the exclusive with Doc Gooden after he got out of rehab.
Wow.
But, you know, nobody was used to hearing women doing sports talk.
Yeah.
So, you know, it took a number of years to develop that credibility and to develop that audience that wasn't hostile
Anne, can I ask you a question? So back in that time, how did the sports figures react to, I mean, do you feel like you got the same interviews, the quality? Was there, what was that dynamic
Well,
that,
you know,
like?
It's interesting because the athletes were so great. Yeah. Because I did so much research and so much homework, and being an athlete, I had insight into, you know, a variety of different sports. I earned, you know, 16 letters in high school. I was never a professional
you
athlete.
You earned 16 letters in high school?
Varsity letters.
What was
letters.
Your best sport?
Tennis. Mm. But
when's the last time you played tennis?
I know, right? Now I'm a golfer. Hello. but they were, the athletes were really great. You know, they, because obviously I came so prepared. I just went so over
so
the top with
that.
My research, mm-hmm. and because I wanted to prove myself. There were so few women doing it, mm-hmm. and you know, it was the time when I was in the locker room interviewing these guys, and you know, telling them to please put a towel on before I would do the interview. I mean, those,
sometimes they did that on purpose.
Oh, absolutely, they were intentionally trying to fluster you or intimidate mm-hmm. you. But the athletes were great. It was just really getting the work.
Yeah,
I can remember back in the day, MSG Network, the programming department. Said, Anne, we love your work. You know, we heard you on ABC Radio Network. We heard you on WFAN. We'd love for you to do a show for us. We have a time slot for you, but we can't pay you.
Oh,
that was 1989.
Unbelievable.
So what did I do? I said, okay, I think I have to turn this into a window of opportunity. So I said, I'm going to bring in my own sponsors. And so I went pounding the pavement on Madison Avenue, trying to get meetings with these advertising executives to bring in sponsorship dollars to support the production of Sports Interview, the cable show. And by gum, that show ran for 17 straight years.
Patty, you got to get Anne Liguori at Most Powerful
years.
Women on that stage.
So, and it's, and I did, here's the smartest thing that I ever did. And I was in my 20s and I was trying to carve my own niche. And you know, money talks, obviously, if you can support a show like that, you keep it on. Obviously, it has to be good. I got the A-list of guests, you know, back in the day, from Mickey Mantle and Ted Williams to Will Chamberlain, Hank Aaron, Wayne Gretzky, you name it, Billie Jean King, you know, Martina, they were all on the show. But, you know, they just, I brought in the sponsors and I kept it going. And I maintained the rights to each one of those shows. That was the key. How many people own their own? Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah.
Her attorney said, you're going to own your own show.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have the high-powered attorney. I just said, I'm going to.
It just made smart business sense.
Yeah, I'm going to maintain the rights to each one of these interviews. And so today I'm sitting on an archives of thousands of half hour interviews with these legends.
And what are you going to do
with that? I license the shows out.
Okay.
I license the footage.
Uh huh.
So anyway, it's a great, you know, story being from a sense that in the sports world when I started, it was very difficult. And I don't know if it's really. It has progressed in some ways very positively, but. I'm sure, like women, you and the women's in the business world, there are still a lot of obstacles.
I wanted to do sports more than anything, and I had this little issue because they didn't want a girl to do it. This is at WNBC. And I know, I'm getting to the mic now. I'm trying so hard with this FaceTime live video.
I love this multitasking, Jay.
I know, but anyway, oops, there we go. Hi. Anyway, so you talked about good prep. I had to do so much prep work, I convinced them to allow me to do a Yankees victory parade, which, of course, there were many of those. And I became the color person to it. Like, I would, the guys would talk about, his record this year, and this, and this, and this. And I'd say, and let me tell you what he's going to do tomorrow. He's getting in his truck, and he's going back to Tennessee and raising his cows and blah, blah, blah. And I talk about their families and their background and where they came from. So I had all this color and interest to it, which, by the way, women love that.
Yes.
And they had no, you know, they wanted women viewers. So I had to really fight to earn my way to do those shows. And I started to become known for doing them at WNBC. So it was wonderful. Covered the Olympics, all sorts of things, but as a result of being able to do that. So
I love
it. That's what we work with when we're coaching people, is get them to tell not just their business story, but more and more, and women are really good at this, is talking about who they are as people as well as business leaders.
Yep.
So all right, we're gonna take a quick break. Sure. We are talking to three dynamos in communications, as you know, Jane, Mary, and Patty. We're gonna take a quick break, come back, continue this discussion on communications, sports, business, and this incredible summit. that Patty puts together. But first, let me tell you that Sports Interview with Anne LaGoria is brought to you in part by Dune Jewelry and the Hamptons Rope Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or spot in timeless pieces for men and women. DuneJewelry.com. And by Peak Vision Sunglasses. Zero distortion, unmatched clarity. Change your game. Peak Vision, PEAKVision.com. And by Peconic Bay Medical Center, the eastern hub for the world-class resources of New York's largest healthcare system, Northwell Health. Peconic Bay Medical Center, serving a 250,000 East End residents. Learn more at PBMCHealth.org.
Hi, I'm Gianna Volpe. I play music that rocks, invite you to East End events that rule, and talk with people all over our Twin Forks on The Heart of the East End, 9 to noon, Mondays through Fridays, on Long Island's only NPR station, 88.3 FM, WPPB, or online at 883WPPB.org.
Join us, won't you, for Radio Deluxe. I'm John Pizzarelli. From high atop Lexington Avenue in the Deluxe Living Room, along with Jessica Malasky, we host a show that is great talk and wonderful music. Join us this week, won't you, for Radio Deluxe.
Listen Sundays at 1 on 88.3 FM.
days a year, WPPB is working for you on the air and on our website. WPPB has a helpful community calendar on our site. Just go to 883WPPB.org to the community calendar tab and tell us about your activity or event. It's free, easy, and fast. WPPB is the voice of the community, 365 days a year, 7 days a week, on the air and online. Spread the word about your community events. Go to 883WPPB.org.
Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne LaGoria on this beautiful Saturday. So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 Eastern Standard Time. You can hear us from anywhere on the planet online at 883WPPB.org. Each show is turned into podcasts and archived on my website at AnneLaGoria.com. Jane Hansen and Mira Savillo, communication gurus and former anchors and show hosts on NBC New York, the first female co-anchors in a major market. They are communication coaches. They are in the house, as well as Patty Sellers, chair of the Fortune Most Powerful Women Summit. And Patty is spending over 30 years writing for Fortune magazine, and the past 20 years building Fortune Most Powerful Women, where she chairs the annual MPW Summit and works with Nina Easton today, running Sellers Easton Media. What a fun morning. I'm so glad you're all here.
Power morning.
Power morning with these dynamo women and who are multitasking as we speak.
Yes, everybody's like looking at me because I've been doing FaceTime Live, and I'm getting really weird pictures of all of us, and my hair isn't done properly. And when you have been on television for 30 years, one of the most important things becomes the hair.
On a very humid day, it's very tough.
Mary and I have had our hair done. This is such a sidetrack. Why am I saying this?
No, I want to hear it.
We've
Tell
had our
all.
Hair done everywhere in the world.
I bet.
And we know we can.
You
we
know
can,
how I'm the same way. Because I never do my hair on my own. Can you believe it?
Really?
I can't smooth it out.
I can't either.
I just don't have that gene, that talent. I have to get my hair done everywhere I go.
Yep. And it's hilarious. And you learn things about countries when you're there. Because where else do people talk? Women talk.
In a hair shop. Absolutely.
But you should have seen Mary in Dublin getting her hair done.
Oh, what
happened? What was that about? We just got her hair done.
Oh, yeah. No, it's always fun. You get, rather than just going to the same old place doing it.
And aren't the women there the best? They're so
always
in Ireland. Oh, they're so nice. They're so hospitable.
I've probably been there, I don't know, 12 times. And I played at the course that the Royal Port Rush.
Yes, where the Open Championship
was. Yeah. I played there.
Oh my gosh, that's a tough course.
It's well, I didn't say I played well. I just said I played there.
I hope you had good weather, because the first time I ever played Port Rush, it was driving rainstorm. I couldn't see half the holes, so it was nice to get back and at least see it in all its glory, because we had some sunny days. But speaking of golf, Jane, I'm glad you brought it up, because I want to talk about inclusion and how important with this summit, Patty, it is for these, especially these CEOs, to feel like they're part of, other groups that men have always been, members of. Is that important for these women CEOs? For instance, at Augusta National, they only started admitting women members in 2012. And there are only 6 female members at Augusta National right now.
Let me see if I can name them. Condoleezza Rice, right. Darla Moore,
right.
Ginny Rometty,
right.
Who's the CEO of IBM. Okay.
There's Heidi Ueberroth.
What about
Heidi Ueberroth is a member. Interesting.
Yes.
I know Heidi.
Yeah. Heidi Ueberroth, who actually plays golf out here. And and so only 6 female members, since 2012. But how do you talk to these CEOs about inclusion and how important it is for them to feel like they can get into some of these, traditionally all male establishments?
Yes. It's a big topic at our Fortune Most Powerful Women events now. I will tell you what has made the Fortune Most Powerful Women events so successful over the last 20 years. One of the biggest factors has been that from the beginning, we have gathered women to talk about the most critical issues going on in the world today. It's not about glass ceilings. It's not about gender stuff until the last couple of years, where gender, equity, equal pay, Me Too, inclusion, all of those things have become one of the most important issues that companies, so now we talk about it. So here's the dilemma. We have an event, main event, 400 women, men not allowed. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Men need to be part of the conversation in order to advance women. All I know is that this is a very successful...
Do you get complaints from men?
We don't get complaints. And, it's interesting because there was that woman, I can't remember her name, who sued Augusta National because it excluded women. And that led to, I know that Darla Moore and Condoleezza Rice were the first two members of Augusta National. Frankly, anybody could accuse us of not letting men in. Warren Buffett actually was our sole male guest every year for a number of years. And Warren will be 89 years old in this month.
Right.
And he recently stopped coming.
Martha Burke, by the way.
Martha Burke. Yeah, so I don't know. I've got a mixed mind about that.
Well, I would say that, again, coaching business, and I coach in corporate cross sectors, and I would say the number one trend in workshops that nurture and develop women's executive presence is inviting men as well.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. Because they know that oftentimes it is a man who's the boss, and they want to sensitize not just the women and give them skills on how to come across as better leaders, as more confident leaders. But to do that and to really execute on that, they need the buy-in and support from men in the organizations. Yes, the bosses, but also their peers. And what I've seen, which I think is one of the best trends and exciting trends, especially with younger men, is that they want to know. And for instance, one of the strategies that we talk about is find a mentor, find a sponsor in your organization that can put you forward and make sure that somebody doesn't talk over you.
Sure.
That you get credit for your ideas. And men need to know. They need to be able to say, well, wait a minute. Jane was just speaking there, and I'd like to hear what she has to say. So in that corporate boardroom, you need not just women supporting women. You need the buy-in and support from men.
And they need to be educated on what
exactly. And they want
going
to.
On. I like to hear that.
Yeah.
Well, do you also find
some
that
some of them want to?
Well, yeah.
Do you also feel that men who have daughters are much more enthusiastic in, you know, in what we have to say, right? Because they get it. They want their daughters to have
women.
Equal yeah. opportunity.
Mm-hmm. I have studied this issue of men with daughters. They are much more evolved on
Definitely.
Average. They want to create the workplace that their daughter would like to work
to
in.
Thrive.
They think a lot about that. Men with daughters makes all the difference. It's
I
amazing.
Agree. It has in my career, I'll tell you that.
Have a daughter. Men, have a daughter.
Teach yourself
Keep
a daughter.
On trying until you have
and
a daughter.
And that's a great transition to my next point, because I think getting back to what we mentioned earlier, daughters, girls who are exposed to sports and competition, it's so important. It develops self-esteem. It develops confidence. It develops, if, you know, how do you win? How do you lose? Playing, you know, the sportsmanship quality, you know, discipline, mental strength. You learn so much from
teamwork.
Being in teamwork. Mm-hmm. You learn so much from being an athlete. Mm-hmm. Everything I learned as a kid athlete, I'm using today.
Yeah, but you were unusual because you were able to do that. When we were kids, there wasn't a lot of athletic options
for women.
Well,
it was my issue as well, because Title IX was passed in 1972, 2 years before I actually got into high school. But in
thanks to Billie Jean King.
Exactly. But in junior high school, can you imagine? You know, I was the first one picked in the backyard with the guys, you know, because I was the fastest runner at the time. And, you know, I was just a tomboy, right? So I was so into sports, and I get to junior high. There are no teams for girls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The only
I bowled.
Exactly.
I was a bowler.
That was
it.
I quit the Girl Scouts to join the bowling league. My mother was not happy about that. But then all of a sudden,
Girl Scouts to join the bowling league?
Well, you know, just time management.
That was one of the places where you could play on a team.
Exactly.
We did get some there were no women's sports teams in Kansas City when I was growing up.
Isn't that just terrible? And so
in high school.
In
high school, what I mean.
Title IX was passed. And Connie Cornish, shout out for Title IX, who I went to high school with. Hi, Connie, I love you. We have to get together. Brexville High in Ohio. So anyway, so finally we're in high school, and there are teams. Now, there wasn't a girls' tennis team. I had to play in the boys' team. But at least
you
we learned.
On the boys'
of
team?
Course. I played number one singles when I was a senior.
Yay!
Okay. Yes, all boys.
Oh my gosh.
And that's what I'm saying. I learned so much by competing with and against boys. And, you know, obviously, it's been helpful in my sports broadcasting career. But it's so important, don't
dating.
You think? It's so important to have those skills, although you all have developed beautifully. And you're saying, but you're athletes. I mean,
yeah.
Jane, you work out every day.
Of course I do, and I play tons of sports, but I had to learn them when I was older, not as a kid.
Oh, really?
My daughter, who began to play golf when she was 4 and tennis when she was 4 and swimming and all of that, she's got natural abilities now because she will never lose that opportunity.
And
I, on the other hand, have to work really hard just to try to get, if I get par on a hole, I'm like thrilled to death.
And then the soccer, the world soccer. I mean,
how exciting
that was
that?
Just so exciting.
Yes.
And that made me start thinking about how far we've come.
Yeah. That's
uh-huh.
right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Most of the powerful, and I'm talking really powerful women who I've come to know over the last 20 years, I'm talking about the female Fortune 500 CEOs, of whom there are only like 33 out of 500,
wow.
but practically all of them were athletes in high school and or college.
Oh yeah,
that's a good stat.
It's a huge training.
That's why
group.
It's such an important concept to have your growth. Look, you want your kids to play sports for the fitness aspect, but to learn all these qualities that you take with you the rest
Absolutely.
Of your life.
Absolutely. A lot of, I mean, when you're little, we all experience this, a lot of the girl sports are individual sports. I mean, like, you know, tennis can be team, but boy sports, think about it, football, baseball, hockey, you know, whatever, lacrosse,
soccer,
they're all
blah, blah,
team
blah.
Sports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So men have an advantage in learning team sports early. And it's just great, the women's soccer.
Right, that's why, you know, I love golf and tennis. They're lifetime sports. I urge everybody, whether you're a boy or girl, to learn those two sports, because you can play golf and tennis for a lifetime. But the team sport concept is so important. Mm-hmm. You learn so much.
You know, what I loved about, what I love about golf is, and this is what I learned quickly on at NBC, I was one of few women that played golf there. And so they would send me out to all of these tournaments, and I would meet such tremendous leaders of industry and have would be on a golf cart with them for 4 or sometimes 6 hours.
Wow.
As you know, some of those...
It can be a long day.
Some of those charity tournaments take forever. Uh-huh. But you would have their ear and could learn things. And I remember thinking, I am so jealous that guys get to do this once a week. They're out there golfing.
Well, I hope you can slow down the play, Jane, with your chit-chat.
And what do you think I did?
So now, with the time we have left, it's going so fast. Let's talk about your work with athletes. And I know all of you have, you know, taught athletes communication skills. You've interviewed athletes at the summit. Yeah. And then I want to hear what you're all working on today. So who wants to start? Mary, you want to talk about?
Sure.
I know you've worked with athletes.
Yeah. I would say that most of the athletes, we had a fun, remember the NASCAR thing that we did?
Yeah.
And working with Tommy Logano, I believe. Anyway, some of the big NASCAR, the drivers.
And actually, Mary was driving a car.
Yeah.
She drove.
Yeah, well, they kind of put me in the car. Anyway. I had never, they needed me to understand I'd never been to a NASCAR race, so they had to get me prepped that way. But anyway, so, and then a lot of the athletes that I've worked with, whether it's, you know, like Terry Bradshaw or Dan Marino, Billie Jean King, but a lot, but usually it is because it has been, say, a pharmaceutical company wants them to come in and talk about managing pain or whatever it is, they're the face of that. And so then they have to learn how to talk not just about their sport, but there's going to be some...
And what are the challenges of doing that?
Well, because it's a little bit of a loose cannon when you've been hired by somebody else, like a pharma company, or you've been or a financial services company. You know, from the corporate's perspective, they want to make sure that they don't go rogue on them. They'll talk about any particularly when you get out of your sport.
No. Sure.
So there's a little bit of that. And the athlete has to feel comfortable with it. But they're always fun. They're always for the most part straight shooters, which is a great thing from the public's perspective. But from their sponsor's perspective, they makes them a little nervous.
The other thing about working with athletes is that they're telling me to get closer to the mic because I'm so busy with my FaceTime.
You haven't done this ever, you know.
Right. But anyway, so I've done a lot of work with athletes that want to become broadcasters, and if you think about it logically, like in the field of football, for example, the average player, they sign one, their first contract might be their only contract. The average length of time they work is something like 3 years, 2.5 or 3 years, which means they've worked their whole life to become this superstar football player, and all of a sudden, they no longer have a career because of being wounded, or, you know, something happened, some kind of an injury or whatever.
Yeah.
They think that transition to become a sportscaster is going to be really easy. Mm. But it's not.
No.
To be able to talk about a game is a whole lot different than playing the game.
And
so
the
that's
trend, Jane, has been the networks are hiring these former athletes. And they assume just because they've obviously been in the sport and are knowledgeable about their sport that they can all of a sudden
be really
communicate.
Good at,
but that's not always the case.
And I've worked with a lot who'd never made it. But the one other thing I'm doing right now that I just want to mention briefly is I'm involved in creating a network that's all about CBD.
Yeah.
And
talk about the athletic benefits of this, because you know, the oils and the ointments, I hear nothing but great things about the pain relief
around it.
There's a lot of confusion about what's legal and what's not. I'm working with, the CBD has no THC or the marijuana in it. It's really all about managing pain. There are a lot of people who believe that CBD offers a delivery system, for example, for salves or tinctures or things that you might put on an injury, and it will last for much longer. So the concept is that this might actually help the opioid epidemic, because you no longer have to take a drug that goes through your whole body, but instead you can treat the exact area that's being targeted for a long period of time of pain relief, and thus don't need to have a pharmaceutical drug.
What a great concept. When will this network debut?
Mid-October. It's going to be called Kush Media. And it's a lot of fun right now working on it.
I bet. It's always great to be a part of something brand new.
Yeah.
Well, there's such buzz around the subject.
Absolutely.
And plus, there's so many people in the space.
Buzz. Good, Mary.
Oh, okay, good.
That They should have renamed it Buzz. That would have been so good.
It was already taken.
See? I knew you thought of that. Patty, how about you? What's your experience with athletes?
So now at Sellers Easton Media, where one of the things that we do, so we create content. We do storytelling content, helping people tell their life stories via articles, books, video, films, full length, short documentaries, podcasts, whatever. Any way you want to tell your story. We have worked with some athletes and, renowned people, regular people, to help them understand who are you and what do you want to be famous for? What is your story? Most people are living, everyone lives within their own life. They don't know their narrative. They don't see the forest for the trees. So we help people figure that out. And one of the things with athletes, especially professional athletes, they put all their energy into their athletic careers, and then it ends, and it's like, okay, who am I now? So one of the things we do is we help people figure out who they are. As we talk about this, I'm thinking we should work together on this.
Yeah,
we should work together.
Okay, and we're starting our new business.
We're not calling it Buzz.
No, we're not calling it Buzz. We could, but then we'd get sued.
I
love it, but it's already taken.
Oh, okay.
So we should all work with athletes?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Sure.
Focus on sports figures.
And by the way, spending over 30 years writing for Fortune with Sports Illustrated right upstairs in the Time and Life building at Rockefeller Center, Sports Illustrated was my favorite magazine. I loved reading sports stories because telling a sports story and telling a business story are very similar. It's all about winning and losing, success and failure, failure and resilience. And there is such a beautiful similarity and synchronicity between business people at the top of their game and sports people at the top of their game.
The thrill there of victory, the agony of defeat.
There's so many similarities between sports and business. Mm-hmm. It's such a fascinating topic.
It is.
This has been really fun, ladies.
Really? Yeah.
Really fun.
Thank you, Anne.
What's that?
Best show ever?
Best show ever. I thought you wanted me to read something. I'm like,
no, I can't read that.
Well,
either.
In thank the 2 minutes we have left, I just want to, again, thank you, all of you, for coming in. But what are your thoughts for the future? Good for ladies in
for
business?
Women, I think there is, because if you really listen to young people talk, that both men and women, there's just much more support of the expectations are higher. But I think there's
hopefully
just more support.
The young
around.
People I today really do don't believe. Realize there was such a division.
And
Yeah. I mean, my daughter sometimes when she'll say to me, "Well, what do you mean when like moms didn't work or when women didn't have the same same privileges?"
Right.
Or,
that's great to hear that.
Well, it is, except
they don't understand what it was
the
like.
Fight, and they also
it's kind of like women don't know who Billie Jean King is. Young tennis players.
Well, yeah.
Can you imagine not knowing Billie Jean King and what
when
she
I
did?
Joined when I joined Equinox in on the Upper West Side, they said, "Do you know anybody who works out here?" I said, "Billie Jean King," and they go, "What's her name?"
Oh,
she'll get $100 to gift certificate.
Oh my God! Well, I want to
like 21.
I want to commend all you women for doing such great work. Really, I want to take one of your communication classes.
You don't need it.
It's been so much fun to have you in the studio. Jane Hansen, Mary Savillo, Patty Sellers. I want to thank our brilliant engineer, Kyle Lynch. We love you, Kyle.
Yay, Kyle.
I want to thank all of you who listened to the show, who took the time to write us on social media and text. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. I'll talk to you next Saturday morning right here on Sports Interview with Anne LaGorrie.